Operation Domination is underway. The ultimate game plan to dominate your NFL experience. With your hosts, Dan Mayden.
Last but not least on Sunday
Chase
night.
Morton.
I got it.
Chris Dowhouse.
Get him, Chase. Get him, Chase.
And Adam LaRue.
No, not necessarily, but it's against.
You hope to be great and dominate.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! It's the NFL New Year, and it's the debut for Operation Domination. Thank you all for tuning in live on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe, OP Domination. That's for our YouTube channel, our TikTok, our Instagram, our social media feeds, everything, as we got a new look. If you were with us with the old show and the MD's Fantasy Football Show, thank you for coming over. If you're brand new, to check out what we're going to have in store for you. I hope you stick around all season long. Our first episode today, we got everyone in the house. I'm Dan Mader. Got my co-host here, Chase Thorin, Chris Dowhower, Adam LaRue. Boys, are we excited or what?
Super excited. Very excited to start a new show, start a new season, and start to talk about free agency football as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to have other people around to talk about it with instead of just shouting to myself or into the void.
Ain't that the truth?
It's better to have a microphone on. Adam, how about you, buddy?
Feeling great. Yeah. New year of football. Very excited. It was nice to kind of not be glued to my phone for a couple weeks there. And then, and you know, Combine got it primed and now I'm all in.
All in. You know what else is all in? Our guest that we have to introduce. So let's hit it. Oh, yeah. That's right. He is the man. He is the myth. He is the legend. Host on RotoWire and SiriusXM, the FSWA 2022 finalist football writer of the year, Mr. Jim Coventry!
Thank you. Wow. Wow. Feel like I'm walking onto the 50-yard line. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Jim, thanks so much. Our first guest for our new show. Couldn't have planned it any better because we got a lot to talk about. FYI, right off the jump, guys, we are not going to get to every single free agent here. We want to do a nice deep dive into them. We'll be back next week, Wednesday, 9:30, same place, same time. Maybe with a new guest, we'll see. But we'll talk about the ones we don't get to today. That's what it's going to be like for the offseason. Wednesday nights at 9:30, plug it in to Operation Domination. All right, so I want to get this thing kicked off right away. We want to show with the people what we're all about. So let's go right into our top five fantasy relevant signings. Of course, number one has to be Mr. Kirk Cousins, the richest man ever. Like, I think he even has Patrick Mahomes rivaled at this point throughout his career with the contracts he's been able to come up with. Jim, he goes to the Atlanta Falcons for many reasons. We all became very, very excited, although with the exception of Minnesota Viking fans. I know our Packers fan on here probably doesn't care so much, but we'll get to him in a second. Jim, what do you make of the Kirk Cousins of it all?
So for Kirk Cousins himself, fairly lateral move for the Atlanta Falcons, game changer. So they bring in, the big key is Zach Robinson, right? You get rid of Arthur Smith. The old running game was run the ball 700 times and throw 150. I know that's nowhere in the ballpark, but you get the point. And now they're going to have maybe a big boy offense. So Zach Robinson coming from Sean McVay's tree, it's likely they want to run three receiver sets, and they really didn't have that. They had Drake London and a bunch of nobodies, but they bring in Darnell Mooney, and we know Kyle Pitts. We're not quite sure at this point what he actually is. And Kirk Cousins walks into a situation where he'll have weapons, he'll have a coach who will want to throw, will be willing to spread some defenses out. So this is wheels up for Drake London, who has been very underutilized. He's had very bad quarterback play. Now he'll have a very good quarterback. And I'm not worried about that Achilles injury. Achilles injury sap explosiveness. Kirk Cousins is a pocket passer. He's not going anywhere. So that's not an issue.
Yeah, maybe he goes from running that 4.93 back in the day. Maybe he's more like a Tom Brady now today. You know, we're not really too worried about it. Chase, let's get to you, man. Cousins goes to the Falcons. First thoughts, go.
My first thoughts were, yeah, like you said, Jim, just a giant step up for them. If you look at what Atlanta quarterbacks did last year, actually the last 2 years, they've only averaged just over 14 points per game fantasy-wise, and I'm talking from the fantasy standpoint here now. Cousins, as a starter, has never averaged below 14.7 in a game, and if he's been the starter for the entire season, he's never averaged fewer than 16.3 fantasy points per game. So, I mean, like you said, Jim, it's a lateral move for him in terms of the weapons he gets to throw to. He does get a little bit of a step up, maybe offensive line-wise, as long as the Falcons can maintain that. But Zach Robinson, the Rams' pass game coordinator, in fact, the last couple of years here, I think he's just probably chomping at the bit to get going with Kirk Cousins here. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Kyle Pitts is actually capable of, what Drake London is actually capable of here. But in terms of fantasy points-wise, all of a sudden the Falcons are relevant again instead of frustrating afterthoughts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's put it this way. Kirk Cousins, since 2020, he's never been worse than quarterback 12 from a points per game basis. And he's still going to have weapons here going into a very similar system to what he just had with Kevin O'Connell going in with Zach Robinson, like you touched on there, Chase. And on the flip side, those other guys, the Drake London, the Bijan Robinson, the Kyle Pitts. I mean, let's put this in perspective, especially when it comes to Drake London and Kyle Pitts. 42nd and 52nd. Those were the rankings of Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke when it came to catchable passes. Yep. That's where they ranked at, catchable passes. Kirk Cousins, third. It's just the upgrade is absolutely positively insane. Adam, you're looking at Bijan Robinson right now from a dynasty standpoint. Where does this put him? Is this enough to make him now maybe RB1 if you're going for a dynasty startup?
Yeah, I think it definitely puts him, you know, probably as the favorite in that discussion. There are certainly other conversations to be had, but I think he would be mine at this juncture. Look, I think, Kirk's going to help him in the receiving game. I think, you know, with this passing game becoming a lot more explosive, he's not going to be facing stacked boxes nearly as much as he has this past season. I think this offense is going to be unpredictable because there's so many weapons all over the place. I mean, we have another name we're going to talk about here in a moment in relation to Atlanta's offseason moves. But they're three receivers deep. They've got a great tight end. They've got Bijan Robinson. Like, this is going to be an unpredictable offense, and that's going to lead to a lot of these guys being super, super efficient.
Chris, do you have any concerns about the Cousins move? And do you want to touch a little bit on what the Vikings have been done in his place since he's been gone?
Yeah, that's my concern, Dan. If I'm a Vikings fan, I'm concerned, what in the world am I doing? And why did I pay the other players money? Why am I going with Sam Darnold possibly for next year as my starting quarterback? While Kirk Cousins took $90 million, it's guaranteed. Well, I know it wasn't, you know, what he's used to getting necessarily guaranteed, but $90 million for about 2 to 3 years for a quarterback isn't bad money. And that's something that I think the Vikings could easily match. That's a team that I just don't understand what they're trying to do right now.
They're trying to draft a quarterback. That's what I think is probably going to happen there. You bring in Sam Darnold 1 year, $10 million there. He's a bridge quarterback, nothing more. The plan has to be to draft a quarterback. There's all the reports about they tried to go balls to the wall, essentially, to get Anthony Richardson last year, weren't able to pull off the deal. So we'll be interested to see them trying to get into that top three may not be ruled out. Although, I will say this, just a little caveat, with the Patriots sending off Mac Jones, that was kind of a signal to me that they're definitely going to draft a quarterback instead of moving back, maybe. So that might have just got a little bit harder from that perspective. Is it a downgrade for Justin Jefferson, Jim?
Yes, because right now, today, if it's Sam Darnold, the dude probably still sees ghosts. Remember back in those days on the Monday night game, Sam Darnold will come in and he'll have a few good games. He's done that pretty much everywhere he's gone. But then as soon as, you know, defense coordinators figure out what Darnold's doing in a specific offense he's in, they take away what he wants, and all of a sudden then he turns into a pumpkin very quickly. And it's not salvageable. The line is okay in Minnesota. It's not a bad line. It's probably above average and not an issue there. And having Aaron Jones helps, but ultimately he's Sam Darnold. And that's going to be a problem. Now, Justin Jefferson will still get targeted, so he'll be able to be fantasy viable, but it's really hard at this point with this quarterback to say you're drafting Justin Jefferson with a top six pick.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I will say this, without Cousins last year, with dealing with the Nick Mullins and the Josh Dobbs of it all, three of his four games, he was absolutely excellent. He actually still finished, I believe he had wide receiver 3 overall during those 4-game stretches from week 15 to week 18. And he also, probably more importantly, had 44 targets. And I say that's more importantly because that means no matter who the quarterback is, no matter what's going on offensively, Kevin O'Connell will Sean McVay it up like he does to Cooper Kupp and say, you're getting the ball no matter what the situation is. So that's the one caveat I can say if you're Justin Jefferson owner, you know he's going to at least get the football. Everything else, though, Jordan Addison, he only averaged a little over 5 targets a game. TJ Hockenson's coming off of an ACL on top of having to get with a new quarterback. So there's a lot of situations there with Minnesota where we got to wait and see how that whole thing is going to shake out. Another guy I want to talk about, Saquon Barkley. Adam, help me out with Saquon Barkley. Now, as a 49er fan, I don't want to see what I now consider to be rivals in the NFC, the Eagles, get any better. But I had to say, as a fantasy guy, I was pretty excited to see Saquon Barkley. What was your thoughts there?
Yeah, this is a really interesting move. I mean, he just went from like one type of offensive line to the other. Now we'll see what changes. I mean, Jason Kelce, despite being at retirement age, was like the best center I've ever seen, just with his athleticism again at that age. He's awesome. So we'll see what that change, you know, does for this offensive line, especially as far as the run game goes and especially as far as the interior goes. But that being said, it's a massive upgrade even without Kelce from the Giants that quarterback. So the passing game is going to be better, right? Again, help the, you know, having a threat of a passing game existing is going to help the running lanes a little bit. And also just the run blocking on the outside is going to be tremendous. This is a awesome move from fantasy perspective. I don't know how I feel about paying running backs, especially guys who've been hurt, but from a fantasy perspective, this is awesome.
Yeah, and I will say this too. It's front-loaded. It's 2 years. It's really just $12 million a year. It doesn't wind up being that bad for the Philadelphia Eagles, I think, all in all, when you're talking about a contract for Saquon Barkley. Let's also put this in perspective when you're talking about the upgrade of the team that he gets. He had the 32nd worst offensive line last year and the 30th offense in scoring points. That killed his opportunities. He's going to get a lot more than that. To your point, without Jason Kelce, it doesn't matter. It's still going to be a hell of a lot better blocking up front all the way around. So Saquon Barkley finally gets an opportunity to maybe actually be efficient and not run the stack boxes all day, every day. Chase, I'm going to ask you this question, though. Jason Kelce gone, Saquon Barkley in. What does this do for the push-tush?
Well, tush-push, I don't think is still not going anywhere because you've still got Jalen Hurts and he can still squat the team bus if he needs to. So, I mean, obviously, nobody ran that like Jason Kelce. He's the center that they built the thing around, for crying out loud. He's one of the best, if not the best, to ever play the position. Recency bias, you know, notwithstanding. But, you know, listen, Jalen Hurts is still going to get his. He's still going to do what he has to do. This is still a good offensive line left to right. It wasn't just Jason Kelce up the middle. They're a decent offensive line, all things considered. And, you know, Saquon Barkley he's going from one of the worst offensive lines in the league. He couldn't put 5 guys together all season to one of the ones that's been the most stable and a team that has had success, that wants to run the football. There's 300 carries available, even if you take Hurts's rushes out of there. And when Saquon gets that kind of, you know, if he gets the 230 or whatever it was carries that Swift had last season, I mean, it's Katie bar the door in terms of the run game there in Philadelphia. I think the Philadelphia fans, they haven't seen a fantasy football running back be able to put up this kind of fantasy football points since LeSean McCoy 12 years ago. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Saquon can do here on an offense that actually is functional.
Yeah, no, it's all a fair point. I want to point this back. Just a little quick thing about Jalen Hurts, though. If without Jason Kelce, if the tush-push does go away just a little bit, I mean, this guy had 14 of his 15 touchdowns within the opponent's 10-yard line. That's a big deal for his fantasy value.
Oh, yeah.
So, Chris, give me 2 things. Fast forward me the draft day on August. Where do you think you're going to take Saquon Barkley? And then also tell me, do you have concerns now for Jalen Hurts if his fantasy value gets affected if Saquon Barkley takes some of those carries?
I think Saquon Barkley is going to be one of the top running backs off my board. I might even take him in the first round. I know that there's some concerns about Jalen Hurts, you know, stealing some of his touches. I'm not as concerned about that. Whether it's a tush push or not, what you're going to see is that Saquon Barkley is playing with actual good receivers, Dan. I mean, I don't think he even knows what that feels like playing with the Giants for the last past years, where all the attention in the world is not going to be on you. You have a mobile quarterback. Saquon Barkley, we saw, you know, DeAndre Swift have his career year last year, is going to be able to come in this offense and light it up, barring health, of course. But I think that's a lot of concerns for anybody. I think this is a home run, you know, fit for him. We saw what Christian McCaffrey brought to that 49er offense that made it even more potent. Saquon Barkley brings something even more potent. Jalen Hurts might have a little bit of reduction in the rushing touchdowns, but you might see a lot more passing yards, a lot more first downs, and it shouldn't be nearly as terrible as last year's season ended.
Hard to be, especially with bringing in Kellen Moore. Should be an upgrade over Brian Johnson.
One more thing, too, Dan. We shouldn't have to sit there and watch Boston Scott or Kenneth Gainwell too much either.
You sure? Are we sure?
I mean, well, I'm not. It is. We'll go. I'll have to put Adam on this one. He's the Colt, our Colts guy, but.
Fingers crossed and toes crossed. On the flip side, the Giants brought in Devin Singletary. That's something we'll wait till next week to talk about. I want to talk about Tony Pollard. He goes to Tennessee, and this was the one, I think, of all the big name running back acquisitions that I just wasn't really too fond of because, well, I selfishly have Tajay Spears in like three dynasty leagues, and that was just not what I was looking for. No! Jim, Tony Pollard comes in. He gets paid. So I'd have to think he'd be the lead back. What do you make of that situation?
So $8 million, yes, it's not the money that Barkley and Jacobs got, but it's still $8 million, and that speaks in this market as starting running back. And I almost see Pollard, Tony Pollard, and Tajay Spears as kind of redundant. They're similar style-type players. They're both good in the receiving game. They're both speed backs. I thought Tony Pollard was at his best. I mean, it's obvious, but because – when Ezekiel Elliott was the lead back, I always say this, defenses play at the speed of the lead back. We see over the years, we see change of pace guys go off year after year. When a faster back comes on the field, the defense doesn't say, hey, we got to play faster now. It doesn't work that way. Muscle memory is you're playing at that speed, and that's why change of pace runners hit it. So we saw with Pollard, the 2 years with Elliott that he had, 5.2, 5.5 yards per carry. Even as a receiver, however that worked, he was like 8.6 to 9.5 per catch. When he was the lead guy, 4 yards per reception, 5.7 yards per catch. I mean, it was drastically lower than what he had because the defense was playing at his speed. It wasn't playing at Elliott's speed anymore, and that's a problem. And I do think Spears is still going to get some work. I just wonder, what are they doing in terms of a different back with a different style? Because I think it's going to be a disadvantage to Pollard and Spears if they're both playing the fast game.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. It, exactly what I posted out as soon as it happened. Why did you pay $8 million for the back you already had in Tajay Spears? I'm 100% with you. And even if they both get mixed in, it's still going to be eating into each other. Maybe it's a 55-45 split. At the end of the day, I kind of just throw my hands up because I still don't know how good this offense is actually going to be. Brian Callahan's never called plays before. We don't know how good Will Levis is. I know they made a big receiver get Calvin Ridley. I'll mention that. That's another one we're going to talk about next week. But there's just a lot of questions coming up with that where now both of them, you have to look at them as like your flex plays. Tony Pollard maybe a little bit more so. Again, he got paid. He probably get a little bit more of the work just to drive your point home on him a little bit more. 4.2 yards per touch, down from 5.9, 4.3 yards per target, down from 6.7, and of course the 4 yards a carry, which did nobody any favors. The only thing I'll give Pollard is that at least he did prove that he could go a full 17 game season as a lead back. That much I'll give him. Adam, Chase, what were your thoughts? Adam first, then Chase.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's completely a redundancy, and yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me. And candidly, Pollard was starting to look less explosive, not just, playing to his speed, which I agree. I think it's a great point that, you know, teams play to the speed of the starting back. But he wasn't himself, especially through the middle of the season. He got a little bit better there towards the end, as he got a little further out from the injuries he suffered early in the season. But and I just don't get it. I would be shocked if, halfway through the season, we're not talking about Tajay Spears looks like the more explosive back, because I don't think that Pollard's body is going to hold up. I know he didn't get hurt, like out of games hurt, but I don't think his body can hold up and be explosive through a whole season.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was injured. Maybe he was, but he was still suiting up. We have to, and I'd say this all the time. If the guy suits up, we have to judge him based on what he's supposed to provide if he's fully healthy and ready to go. Otherwise, you'll be here forever. But we do have some questions coming in. Scooby Taylor, guys, he needs help. He's in a 10-team Dynasty Superflex League. He wants to know if he should trade away Zay Flowers, Waddle, or Shea Rice and Charbonnet for Justin Jefferson and the 203. He has DJ Moore, Drake London, Devonta Smith, and Terry McLaurin as his other wide receivers. Chase, help me out with this one.
I don't know. In my opinion, you don't need to make that trade. You've already got a whole stack of young guys that can go forward. You've got a deep roster. I mean, it is Jefferson, and he's a talent like no other, but we just talked about the problems he's going to have this season going forward. I don't know if you might be able to wait on that. If you can get this owner to wait on it, you might be able to snag him for cheaper after this season. If he ends up having that down year that we've all talked about with Sam Darnold throwing him the football at less than 60% completion percentage. He's already got Drake London, who's young. Terry McLaurin is not old. Devonta Smith is not old. You've got Rashee Rice, who looks like he's got an opportunity to be the number one guy there in Kansas City for quite a while. You've got Waddle. We know that Tyreek Hill, he's turning 30 this season. Zay Flowers, I don't know. I don't know if you need to make this move or not, especially, giving up all of that and Charbonnet. I don't know what your running back core looks like either, but to me, I don't know. I don't know that I'm jumping on that trade. I'm going to try and maybe get a little bit more for it. But
okay, so Chase says no. Chris, what do you say?
Yeah, I understand when I had the stud receiver Justin Jefferson and thinking that's going to complement your receiving core, but I'm more of inclined when Dynasty to go for depth and continue to have that depth, as Chase alluded to, having a Zay Flowers or Shea Rice, guys who can kind of carry you through moving forward. I think that's kind of, I'm sitting on those guys and I'm not necessarily eager to move any of them. I know Justin Jefferson's a great name, but with the situation with Sam Darnold as his quarterback right now, I'm not really excited to make that move.
I echo you guys' sentiments, because here's what I would say to you, Scooby. On top of all of this, this is a great receiver class. If you really want another wide receiver, you're going to be able to draft another one. I'm assuming you still have a first or a second round pick. You already have some great ones. You might want to start looking at some other moves to make. So I echo that with you guys. We get back to it. We had Josh Jacobs. He went to the Green Bay Packers. Chase, I want to get you in on this. So you flip out Aaron Jones. You bring in Josh Jacobs. What were your thoughts?
Well, I know I have a very sad four-year-old at my house because his favorite player, Aaron Jones, whom he calls 3-3, is now across the river in Minnesota. And we live in Minnesota television market, so we have to hear about it all the time. So, yeah, my little four-year-old's having a little bit of an identity crisis today. He wore his jersey today all day and morning. Again, it's a move I'm not thrilled about as a fan, as a Packer fan. I'm not overly concerned about it as a fantasy guy. As a fan, though, I am willing to wait and admit that I could be changing my tune next offseason if we get 2022 Josh Jacobs here in Green Bay. Now we might be talking. Aaron Jones, part of his value is that he's so versatile. He's so good in the run game, but good in the pass game as well. Josh Jacobs, though, offers something running the football, can offer something running the football that Aaron Jones doesn't necessarily do. They don't have to have that heavy guy and the lightning guy. They don't have to do the thunder and lightning because they kind of have it all in Josh Jacobs right now. Jacobs can catch the football. He doesn't have any receiving touchdowns in his career, and we're talking about a guy who had 5 just last season, but he can catch the football, and he does catch the football when it's thrown to him. I think that Jacobs will fit into the offense just fine. I think he still has top 10, top 12 running back ability in Green Bay. So I'm not shied away from Josh Jacobs at all. I think he's still a second roundish type pick, second or third type round type pick. Aaron Jones, however, I'm a little sad for him. I like the dude. Listen, I hope he runs for 1,500 yards and averages 100 yards a game except for the 2 games against Green Bay every year. But he is going, he's going to an offense that's got a ton of question marks, as opposed to the offense that was revolved around him for the last 4 or 5 years here. So I'm keeping Jacobs at the same tier that I had him at. Jones is definitely dropping a couple levels for me.
when we get 2022, Jacobs, like you said earlier, because 2023, Jacobs, I mean, it wasn't terrible, right? RB 18, fantasy points per game and halfway PPR, but everything was just down across the board, 5.1 yards per touch to 4.2, 2.4 yards after contact to 1.5 there. And even 11 carries per broken tackle to 23.5. He wasn't even breaking tackles anymore. And we do have the contract negotiation that was part of it. He wasn't coming in as motivated, not as in shape. And that could all be things that we look at. Jim, where are you valuing a Josh Jacobs and an Aaron Jones for that matter?
I'm a little concerned for Josh Jacobs. So I see what the Packers did. They went from a 29-year-old backer, soon to be 29, to a 26. So they just downgraded age and they figured that out. But the thing I was always ticked with the Packers, they had Aaron Jones, superstar player, and they always split his work, and they didn't need to. A.J. Dillon had gotten worse every single year, and until Dillon was unavailable late in the season, I don't know that Aaron Jones would have gotten that workload had Dillon been healthy because they were so stubborn. So right now, I know they might not have anybody right now with Jacobs, but my guess is their track record is they are going to bring another back in there because they did it to Aaron Jones. And maybe that's to keep the preservation of the running back. Maybe that's – now I know Jones missed time, but he played all 17 games in 2022. So there's that. A couple other points on Jacobs. That career year Jacobs had, we could go in hindsight and see easily why we did it. The Raiders didn't pick up his fifth-year option. He was pissed. He must have worked out like a madman because that 4.9 yards per carry, that was much better than 2021, 2020, and even 2023. We take those 3 years surrounding the year he was pissed. He has 3.84 yards per carry in those three seasons, a full yard per carry less than the year he was pissed. You mentioned a broken tackle rate. Last year, 40th percentile, terrible. Yards after contact, 33rd percentile. Jacobs was not – he was a volume-based back. And like Chase said, for fantasy, he was fine because volume is king in fantasy football. But if he doesn't get that level of volume, if he gets the Aaron Jones treatment where he has to share work, that's going to be a problem. Now, you asked about Aaron Jones – Chase pointed out very well, if Sam Darnold's a quarterback, that is a problem. The good news for Jones, he's 29. He's on a one-year, $7 million deal. Unlike Green Bay, Minnesota can use him up because they have no motivation to play him beyond this year. So they could use him as a full-time player, runner, receiver. And like I said, he has a season of full health 2 years ago. So I'm optimistic for Jones. But like Chase said, I'm nervous that if Sam Darnold's a quarterback, it could drag down the entire offense.
Yeah. Look, Aaron Jones, to me, he falls into that late RB2, early RB3 territory, and Josh Jacobs is a late RB2. There's more upside with a better offense. There's a better chance he rebounds, at least from what he did last year. I think he will be better than what he was last year. I don't think we're getting the 2022 version, though, anytime soon either. Chris, on the flip side of this thing, Zamir White on the Raiders, what do you think they're going to do there? Are they going to add somebody else? If they don't add anybody of significance, I should say, do we think Zamir White could be? Are we looking at a sleeper here?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned what's going to happen with Zamir White. I think the Raiders might ride it out with him. I don't think he's necessarily the most talented back in the world. I know he had a decent little stretch towards the end of the season last year, but this is also a guy who's been a platoon back even in college. This isn't a guy who really brings anything necessarily great to the table. A speed guy, like great breaking tackles, he's a dude to me. So I think it's a matter of time until he kind of starts losing reps. This offense in general, what they're doing this offseason is puzzling to me. Their quarterback situation is not going to help him either. So I really think this is a situation that I'm not excited
to. Don't believe in Minshew magic? The stash is strong. Start.
I like that. We know I like the stash. We've talked about this a lot off air. I am the stash guy that I think he's deserves a shot, but the Raiders were not the team for him to be have that shot.
Look, the Raiders going to add somebody, whether it's the draft or free agency. We just kind of have to see. But let's talk a little bit about Derrick Henry, shall we, Adam? We go to Derrick Henry. He made all of our dreams come true. He goes to the Baltimore Ravens. I just wish this happened 2 years ago, but we get it now. Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I would have loved to have had him, in his prime with Lamar. That would be awesome. There's a million things you could say about like matching, Henry at his best and how he is starting to slow down, is starting to fall off, whatever. Like every running back that we've plugged into this offense gets like 5 yards per carry. Everyone, Gus Edwards, undrafted free agent, like also gets an Achilles, comes back the next year. He's still popping off for 5 yards per carry. So this is like the one offense where like we can plug in the now 30-year-old Derrick Henry. Like I can convince myself like he's still going to be incredibly efficient. I thought anywhere he goes, he's probably going to get touchdowns. He's going to be great in the red zone for any team. You know, he's probably going to get a big workload because he can handle a big workload and there's not a lot of backs that can. But this is an offense that he can actually be efficient as a runner. And I don't think that there were many, if any, other places where that was going to be the case. This is like the perfect landing spot for that perspective.
Yeah, that is where I immediately went to as well. Because look, last year was his worst supporting cast, right? And it's kind of, you know, two yards before contact. That's the lowest it's been for him since 2019. So that kind of goes to show you a little bit what he was getting blocked up. But his efficiency numbers are still okay. 4.2 yards a carry, 4.5 yards a touch. He was still getting, you know, breaking the tackles every 12th carry. Like, it's still okay for a guy so who's turning 30. So you're like, well, I guess you're not done. You're definitely not done. To your point, Adam, he goes to the Ravens. You go with Lamar Jackson. This is what's scary to me, and Jim, help me out here. I might have to put Derrick Henry inside my top five because the more I think about it, the more I'm like, well, if you're going to have Derrick Henry be with Lamar Jackson and for the first time the Baltimore Ravens have a number one back that they just lean on no matter what because he's not going to be rotating with a Gus Edwards or a J.K. Dobbins. It's him. He's the guy. If we're going to see that with this team, what is sky's the limit with that?
So the first thing, which is a little concerning, is they let Morgan Moses go. He was a very good blocker on both run and pass. Now, John Simpson, the guard, wasn't a very good blocker, but he wasn't a train wreck either. So two of their linemen are gone. I don't think it'll be a major issue, but I wanted to point that out. Now, Derrick Henry, and you pointed it out well, that yes, he was in a horrific situation. Remember, the last 2 years, no A.J. Brown. That took a lot of pressure off of him as well because that was a player to be accounted for. Nobody was worried about the passing game last year. Now, Derrick Henry, despite his yards per carry being a full yard lower than they were back in 2019 and 2020, he was still 77th percentile broken tackle rate and 86th percentile yards after contact. So to me, it's exactly what you gentlemen said. It was the line. It was the fact defenses did not have to respect the pass game, and Henry had no help at all, and it was just a circumstance. But his underlying numbers show that with – here's a big thing. Lamar Jackson being the hyper-mobile quarterback and the RPO elements, I always say this. When you use the RPO element, linebackers freeze for a nanosecond. That gives running backs, especially the better ones, a significant advantage. And don't think for a minute that Derrick Henry not going to take advantage of that little hesitation by the linebacker and turn leverage to his advantage.
Yeah, cannot wait for that.
What's the big idea?
All right, it's time for offensive observations. This will be our little segment we have throughout, you know, most episodes. We got a little rant we all need to get off our chest. And today, Chris has a rant that he needs to get off his chest.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate this opportunity to kind of rant about a pet peeve of mine that I'm watching the NFL unfold. We're talking a lot about some of these moves that we've seen this free agency. And well, Adam alluded to earlier as a draft is around right on the corner. And it comes down to the quarterback position and what teams are trying to sell us they're moving on or what they're doing. And some of the rhetoric I'm just not buying. We'll start off with Jaden Daniels. Okay, Jaden Daniels is a good quarterback who had one good year in LSU and has two receivers who are probably going to go to first round, one who's possibly going to go to the top five. That was the one good year he's had. He's a five-year pro. He's 23 years old. It's okay in everybody's book, quote unquote, that it's we can take Jaden Daniels with our first rounders to move up to get Jaden Daniels if I'm the Raiders or I'm the Vikings or I'm, you know, these different teams. And either there's even talk that the Bears should consider taking Jaden Daniels, like Dan Orzowski saying Jaden Daniels should go number one over Caleb Williams. What has Jaden Daniels shown that he can prove that he's worth all that? Meanwhile, we have Justin Fields sitting there in Chicago just in the wind because of this rhetoric about his fifth-year option that nobody can afford. Okay, I watched all kinds of free agent money get spent on stupid moves after left and right that made no sense. But we can't pay Justin Fields $3.5 million this year, which is only $6 million against the cap. And next year, if they do pick up that fifth-year option, it's a whole whopping $21 million. So put those 2 years together, Dan, that's $25 million. How many teams blew $25 million on some of the dumbest signs you've seen this offseason between some of the offensive linemen who are getting paid, some of the defensive linemen who are getting paid, even the running back position, which I do think should get paid, is getting paid pretty well this offseason. Yet, I'm watching Gardner Minshew get $15 million guaranteed to go be maybe a backup in the Raiders, maybe the starter, but talk about redundancy. It's Aiden O'Connell. That's the backs that we're going to get. We have looked at the stats. It's basically the same stats last year. Put him in different offense. Whoop-de-doo. How's that going to change anything? I'm watching Marcus Mariota get signed by the Washington Commanders when they have Sam Howell, who makes nothing. Let's give Mark Mariota, who was probably going to get cut from the Eagles based on his preseason last year, let's give him $7 million. Once again, Justin Fields is sitting there. Then I listened to all the rhetoric about Michael Penix, who a guy who's just, you know, all his concerns about how old he is. He's 24, by the way. And Dan, Justin Fields is also 24. Reminder, Jaden Daniels is 23. And we talk about the upside these guys still can have, what they can still bring to the table. I am frankly just tired of watching these quarterbacks and these teams just drop the ball at the position. Sam Darnold's getting it with eighth opportunity. How many cat lives does this guy have? What has, you know, Jim alluded to earlier in the show, what has he done to show you that he's not going to see ghosts on the sidelines again? I'm just befuddled by this entire offseason, like I said, with the quarterback position and the rhetoric that continues to be fed to us. You know, Bryce Young was going to be great because he has the it factor. We're going to watch, I feel like, Chad Henne Jr. basically come out of Michigan and McCarthy, because he's going to be a top 10 pick because he's such a winner. You know what? Ken Dorsey was 34-3 and wins in Miami as a starter. He won 34 straight games at one point. And he did what as a pro? One of our other winners we have is David Green, won 49 games as a college. Colt McCoy won 50 games as a college. Kellen Moore won 50 games in college. And they all did what as pros? So stop. If we're going to evaluate our quarterbacks, have an actual thing that we're actually talking about that makes sense versus, oh, Justin Fields shouldn't be trusted because he can run and he can throw. And Jaden Daniels is showing he can do what? But we can trade number ones up the kazoo for that. But we can't maybe move a second rounder or a third rounder and pay a second year possible $20 million next year. It's just done, Dan. I can't take it anymore.
What's the big idea?
Well done, sir. Well done. And on that note, we got more free agents to talk about. I'm glad you got that off your chest. DeAndre Swift, switch gears. Talking about those Bears, Chris, we'll go to you on this one. They do sign DeAndre Swift. What did you make of this move? What's his fantasy output now at Chicago?
I actually like the move. I think DeAndre Swift's a pretty good running back. I think a lot of people, you know, kind of knock on him because he got injured in Detroit, didn't necessarily materialize as they hoped. Phil Duffy is kind of, you know, didn't necessarily end on a great note last year. But overall, DeAndre Swift stayed healthy last year, which is the big knock on him. This, you know, Bears offense, what it winds up being, I'm not really quite sure at the quarterback position, but it's going to be a mobile quarterback more than likely. So as Jim alluded to, that's going to help the running back situation. We saw Khalil Herbert be effective. We've seen them kind of have different guys rotate. The one guy that I'd be concerned about is those are people who, you know, invest a lot in Roshan Johnson last year, that maybe he's not going to necessarily get the chance you're hoping for. DeAndre Swift, to me, is a guy that actually fits pretty well on this team.
Yeah, I was one of those people who invested quite a bit in Roshan Johnson. I'm not feeling great about that right now. But I'm not going to talk about that yet. Chase, I want to get your thoughts on this. Touch on what Chris has touched on, though, because Khalil Herbert, Roshan Johnson are on the roster here. What kind of rotation are you seeing here? What do you think is going to shake out when it's all said and done?
Yeah, it's the kind of rotation that I don't really want a whole hell of a lot of shares of next season because we've already seen it. We can't have nice things in Chicago, which doesn't bother me at all. I mean, obviously with the shirt I'm wearing, but you know, last year, if they had one running back at any given moment, that running back would have been pretty damned good. But instead, you never knew from week to week who was going to be healthy for one, but whether it was going to be a Khalil Herbert week, a Deontay Foreman week, a Roshan Johnson week, hell, a Kari Blasen game week, for crying out loud. You never knew who was going to be the guy. And I realized that DeAndre Swift, yeah, in my opinion, probably the most overall talented, and he's got the most cachet in the pros of any of those guys that we've talked about or that we just mentioned here, but you've still got Khalil Herbert, who is more, you know, familiar with what goes on there in Chicago than anybody else. He's been there longer than the rest of them. Roshan Johnson, we've seen him come in and be effective last season, but now you're gonna have to give DeAndre Swift the bulk of the touches in theory. But I'm not convinced that they do that because Chicago typically doesn't do those kinds of things, like use their top weapon, consistently. Top weapon they use consistently is DJ Moore, and that's in the pass game. But they're going to be breaking in a new quarterback for all intents and purposes. It looks like they're breaking in a new quarterback, and with a three-headed monster in the backfield, a brand new quarterback in town behind a team that, you know, a line that's middling at best right now, and a team that I'm not overly, you know, optimistic for next year. I'm staying away from this backfield in any way, shape, or form. I don't care if it's best ball or what.
I was just going to ask real quick, Chase, does it change your perspective that Getsy's not the offensive coordinator because we're not going to do what the Packers do, as Jim was talking about earlier, rotate backs for no reason, or actually maybe stick to the most talented guy?
I'm going to admit I have a hard time taking off my Packer glasses when I look south, but it's Chicago. It's still Chicago.
You don't prove say.
It.
You
prove
don't
it.
Say up there.
Freaking prove it. We're already talking about a team that you just ranted about. It wants to try and give away and can't give away a serviceable quarterback in this league, and they're going to reset the clock. They'll reset the clock. I don't. It's a team that continuously shows that they don't necessarily have a whole ton of direction, and I will I'll wait and see. I'll have to see it to believe it before I believe in any coordinator down there. But yeah, I don't want any part of this backfield.
Chris, what you just touched on for me, and I look at Shane Waldron, it's why DeAndre Swift and Roschon Johnson make the most sense to me as far as who the pair is going to be. We'll see if Khalil Herbert's around or not. If he is, it's still kind of throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into it, but it would not shock me at all, given his background, given their skill sets, why Swift wouldn't be the Kenneth Walker and why Roschon Johnson wouldn't be the Zach Charbonnet of it all. I don't see why that would not fit as far as their player types go with the offensive coordinator that they have. I do want to get back to Jim about Joe Mixon, because he goes to Houston, right? And all of a sudden, Joe Mixon's not dead somehow. I don't just talk about a guy who has 9 lives, Chris. Joe Mixon has like 11 lives. He just finds a way to not get cut, stay on a team, stay prevalent one way or another. So, Jim, when he goes to Houston, what are you thinking about his value?
It's interesting because Joe Mixon, I've said for years, is the great compiler. When he is given volume, he puts up the fantasy numbers. I mean, think of Rashad White last year. He had all that work in the world. Great fantasy player. Joe Mixon, he ended up last season with 257 carries and 52 receptions. That's 309 touches. So yeah, he cashed for fantasy. But what did he do as a runner? 49th percentile broken tackle, 41st percentile yards after contact. He takes over for Devin Singletary. Devin Singletary was the same guy, actually a little better.
Yes.
Singletary was 56th percentile broken tackle rate, which was 7 percentile better than Mixon. He was 44th after contact, which was 3 better than Mixon. So all that said, Singletary got 216 carries and 38 targets. But in the first half of the year, Damian Pierce did cut into that work. So what I'm seeing is if Singletary was fantasy relevant, Mixon's going to continue to get that workload that's going to make him a compiler. He continues there. He is in another very good offense. They're going to move the ball. Now, where Mixon has an advantage, definitely tougher at the goal line. He's a better goal line runner, so he's going to pick up some cheap touchdowns and certainly short yards. That won't help fantasy so much. So ultimately, Mixon is in another compiling spot, but believe it or not, at this stage of Mixon's career, he's honestly not an upgrade on Devin Singletary.
No, he's not.
I agree.
Yeah, Chris.
Can we put the fork in Damian Pierce's love, though? Because that could finally end that.
Yeah, I think that ship sailed the second Devin Singletary completely took over. So I think we're good. We're good on that. Jim, just to get on your point, last year Joe Mixon RB12 in points per game. It wasn't pretty, but it got the job done. He's in a situation to do it again. 16% touchdown rate when in the red zone. That ranks way up there as well. So just go to your point. He's still going to catch the ball. Chris, to your point, Damian Pierce, 0 and everything, but definitely a 0 in the passing game. And Joe Mixon is going to get touchdowns. So yeah, ultimately, is he better than Devin Singletary? No. Is he probably going to have a better fantasy output because he's going to get to do it from week one? Yeah, most likely. That's essentially how that boils down to. Adam, on the flip side of that, the fallout of that was the Cincinnati Bengals signed Zach Moss to a 2-year, $8 million deal. What are you seeing in the Cincinnati backfield?
Well, and this is actually a perfect kind of carryover thought, in that this is the least athletic offensive line in the league. And the only reason I can't say why by a wide margin is because the Rams offensive line also exists, because those two are in a league of their own in terms of unathletic offensive lines. So I, first of all, want to give Mixon a little bit of credit in that it's going to be a massive offensive line upgrade. And that says a lot more about the Cincinnati offensive line than it does the Houston one. But I digress. For Zach Moss, that's a big problem because the Indianapolis offensive line had a resurgence last year and played really, really well. I think this is going to be maybe okay for the passing game in the sense that Zach Moss actually showed a little bit of juice there and is as good or better of a pass blocker as Joe Mixon. But as far as the running game is concerned, I don't like this move at all for Cincinnati. I don't think he has the juice for the type of offense, like the blocking scheme that they work with. I think it won't hurt Burrow. It won't hurt the receiving game. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but this is going to be a significant downgrade as far as the running game goes. We're going to have an unathletic back with a bunch of unathletic offensive linemen. I can switch the channel whenever they're going to run.
Well, Adam, I want to thank you for that, because that, Chris, do you want to stick the fork in Damian Pierce? I want to stick the fork in Zach Moss's magic, okay? Because there is none. We caught a lightning in a bottle for about, what, 4 weeks? Weeks 2 through 6? Yes, he was the RB4 overall. Okay, I get it. Whatever. I took a lot of crap on this, you know, on the MD's show during the season because I was like, he's still Zach Moss. Eventually, it broke true. It just took a little bit longer than I was anticipating it to. When weeks 13 and 14 came back around, when he had to take over for Jonathan Taylor again, you couldn't even start him. You couldn't. He was a volume guy who's still not even in the RB3 conversation. Yep. That's where we were on that guy. Chase Brown, I imagine he's going to get rotated in, right? He was an RB35 from weeks 13 through 18. He was getting about 12, 14 touches. I imagine they're going to go with that thunder and lightning approach. Adam, to your point, Zach Moss, not much juice. I think it would be sooner rather than later we see Chase Brown edge him out. The only problem with that is I don't know if Chase Brown could hold up. So Cincinnati's one of those prime teams where I'm looking for them to add another back. There's nobody, the veteran variety, that I think is that significant that they would add. I don't think they would add an AJ Dillon. I think it's the last veteran back who's got any kind of name to him available at the moment. So we'll see what they add in the draft, which is a weak draft class there. It might just be all Joe Burrow and passing time. This just might be what the get-go is here. Chris, go to you. Deontay, he gets traded to Carolina. What'd you make of that?
Well, Pittsburgh, I don't know what they're doing. They just trade for corners that they're going to wind up not, you know, getting anything back from. They did it with Will Jackson a couple years ago. They're doing it again this year. It's going to probably bond up in the same way. Deontay Johnson obviously was going to have a huge downgrade because Arthur Smith was going to be his offensive coordinator, and we know how he doesn't like to use guys who actually get open and are actually talented. He's not a guy who blocks all the time either, so he's basically going to probably phase out of offense. So for Deontay Johnson owners, I'm excited because we watched – that Adam Thielen had a resurgence last year because he could actually catch the ball within about 5 yards of the field. Deontay Johnson gets incredible separation. He was one of the top guys, continued to be over the last five years, continued to be last year as well. Sometimes he has a little drop issue here or there. With Bryce Young peppering you with 5 yard targets here and there, Deontay Johnson is going to be a PPR machine. I don't know he's going to do necessarily in red zone, but in Pittsburgh, he didn't do anything in red zone either. So I think this is a massive upgrade for Deontay Johnson and Pittsburgh. Good luck.
What's a massive upgrade? Because we were talking about this guy being a wide receiver 3 with Bryce Young. What's a massive upgrade?
I think it's a guy that you can consistently have in your lineup week in, week out. So maybe it's a sort of, you know, still a borderline receiver 3, but I think receiver 2 is definitely with a, you know, opportunity to kind of reach, especially if you're in a full point or half point PPR. Deontay Johnson is going to be the best receiver on this team, and the moves they've kind of made offensively all dictate he's going to be the dude. I think Adam Thielen, you know, is going to be another year older. Jonathan Mingo is not a good player. So I think if you put all those things together, Deontay Johnson is going to be in his contract year as well, has a lot to kind of gain for this year. So I think Deontay Johnson is going to be a guy that people definitely want to have on their team.
So did you love Deontay Johnson last 2 years old?
Did I love him?
Yeah.
I didn't love him because he can't get Pickett as his quarterback.
Now he's got your favorite guy, Bryce Young, as his quarterback.
He does. But what I also saw Bryce Young do is, Carolina is going to throw the ball. That was what they prioritized doing last year. They continue to prioritize that. I don't think Kenny Pickett was allowed to throw the ball, and when he was, we had two offensive coordinators, Matt Sullivan towards the end of last year, that had no clue about what passing attack is supposed to look like, and Deontay Johnson was the guy that kind of got forgotten about. When Mason Rudolph took over at quarterback, we saw Deontay Johnson all of a sudden have a resurgence, because if you actually can throw the ball to him consistently, he's going to get his numbers.
He needs 140-plus targets to be fantasy relevant. He was getting that in Pittsburgh. I don't necessarily know that he gets that in Carolina. I don't know if he gets that kind of volume. And he's not necessarily going to an upgrade in terms of efficient quarterback in terms of the catchable balls he's going to see. He's always been a guy that needs those. He needs the volume of targets because he's only ever caught 60% of the
ball. I hate Bryce Young, but can you not say like he's at least as good as Mason Rudolph? Because we've watched Big Ben, who had nothing left, and then we watched Kenny Pickett throw him the ball. Sorry,
I'm not excited about Deontay Johnson this year, and I'm a guy that does like him as a player and did like him the last couple of years. Coming into the seasons, but he needs those targets. I don't know that he sees 140 plus targets. I wouldn't be taking the over on 140.
Well, here's where I'll cut in. Adam Thielen had 137 targets last year. Now he's still going to be on the team. But if you believe like Chris does, and I tend to kind of agree with this, that Deontay Johnson is just going to take over as the featured receiver with Dave Canales, who I think is a better play caller than what they had going on last year too. I think that all kind of evens itself out for Deontay Johnson to be the featured guy in a better offense. I'm not a Bryce Young guy either. I literally posted out Deontay Johnson has been a wide receiver 2+ most of his career with noodle arm quarterback. Because that's what Big Ben was at the end of his career. So I'm not too worried about that either. Jim, I want to get to you about Jerry Jeudy, though, because this had a lot of elements to it with the Jeudy trade from Denver to the Browns and everybody it affects. So what were your thoughts when this trade went down?
So last year, the Browns were very interested in getting a secondary receiver. So they went for Elijah Moore. And we know what the time in New York was. He had that great 6-game stretch in his first year. And then the second year, whatever weirdness happened with the coaching staff. So he made excuses for him. Well, after Cleveland featured him in the preseason, when they got to the regular season, he was only like 30th percentile after the catch. He only caught about half the passes that were thrown his way, and it was a low depth of target. So it wasn't like, oh, he's seeing 40-yard passes. Of course, you're not catching him. So Elijah Moore didn't work out. Well, there were 100 targets, and it may have been 104, that went to Elijah Moore. Basically, and they had a revolving door quarterback too. Well, we're going to have Jerry Jeudy step in to at least the planned role for Elijah Moore, who busted out there. We know Cooper's going to get fed. We know Njoku's going to be significant, but there's still going to be pass attempts. Kevin Stefanski still runs play action near the highest rate in the league, top 4 for sure. And what will happen is you'll get those quick passes. Jerry Jeudy, here's where he's the upgrade. And I understand what happened with Denver. He was never going to work with Russell Wilson. He was still 83rd percentile yards after the catch compared to the 30 for Elijah Moore. The whole point was to get catch and run from that receiver position. So Jeudy fits exactly what Stefanski wants from that spot. And I know Deshaun Watson's not going to be very good, and I understand that. He is never going to be that guy again. But I'll say this. The last two games he played, Arizona and Baltimore, before he had a season-ending injury, he started to look a little better, at least a close-to-average quarterback.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, because I even have it here. It's like deep sleeper consideration. We might have to go there. He was quarterback 27 to points per game average. I get all that. And redraft leagues, you should be picking him up off the waiver wire. But for the guys who have him in the dynasty lockup right now, when you have Amari Cooper and Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku, you bring in Ken Dorsey to be more of a pass first offense. That's clearly the signal going on here. It could be, we talk about compilation for Joe Mixon. It could be compilation for Deshaun Watson after a certain point. I'm not going to sneeze on Elijah Moore as a third receiver or Cedric Tillman, whoever winds up winning that spot out. So there's a lot of elements there where the Browns should be looking good. Now, I said this last year, Deshaun Watson blew the whole thing up. He gets hurt. PJ Walker blows the whole thing up. So who knows? They decided not to bring back Joe Flacco. They brought in Jameis Winston instead. You know, it's just all those things kind of come together. But very interesting from a bunch of different standpoints. Adam, I'll get to you as my big-time dynasty guy. I'm looking at Marvin Mims, man. I'm like, can he get on the field? Is Sean Payton going to remember to put him on the field? Does he have a choice not to put him on the field?
Yeah, I don't know that he's going to have a choice the way the receiver room is shaking out. So I think that's really nice. And look, I think I'm not the biggest that this is the death knell of Elijah Moore, in the sense that Jeudy, I think, at this point has only shown me that he actually excels going down the field. I haven't seen the route running underneath as well as I would have liked to. Kills down the field. Amazing. And that's what Mims does. So from the Mims perspective, this is awesome, because that's Mims is going to be able to be unleashed down the field. That's what they need. I don't think that will ever be Elijah Moore's game. You know, I love Elijah Moore, and maybe that's why I even care enough to speak on it. But like, he's an underneath guy. Let's be real about that. I know that they're both route runners. They're both small guys. I think one of them succeeds going down the field. I think one of them can kind of come underneath. I don't think there's room for Elijah Moore in the sense that this passing game is going to suck regardless, but I don't think it's as much of a redundancy as it looks like initially once you dive into it a little further.
As far as the Denver side goes,
those were identical roles. That was a redundancy, and it has opened up for Mims.
All right. Mims season, depending on who the quarterback is, that part we don't really quite know just yet. All right. So with all this going on, you got your dynasty leagues, you know, non-startups. You already got your rosters. If you have a startup, by the way, my advice to you, don't start up until after the draft. Wait till everybody's settled in. The drafts happen. Have your startup draft. Then have your rookie draft. Do yourself a favor. All right. You know, otherwise, you're going to just drive yourself nuts. But anyway, I digress. I want to go around the room. We'll start with Jim, Adam, Chase, and then Chris. I want to hear what your buy low and sell high is as of this moment.
So in terms of dynasty, man, you got to go over to the Minnesota Vikings, and I don't know what they're going to do with their quarterback position, but right now, if Justin Jefferson gets locked up and if they don't get a quarterback, I mean, the value he had, we had a caller or a listener ask about a trade. He may not be that level of Justin Jefferson we quite want. So for right now, see what you can get for him. If you can get a haul for him, it might be worth moving him, because if he has a couple of years where there's issues, that's going to set him back a bit. So I think that's one player for sure that you may want to consider selling high. Come back to me on a buy low.
Okay, we will do. Adam, what do you got?
So I have Nico Collins as my sell high. I'm Tank Dell guy. I think he's going to reinforce himself as the dominant of the two receivers. I certainly think Nico Collins has surprised me. I didn't like him a ton coming out. I think he's better than I thought. For sure. I think he's still going to be a relevant starter, not hating on the guy, but do I think he is going to stay at his current value where he's, you know, bordering upon a dynasty wide receiver one? No, I don't. I think dynasty wide receiver two, sure, but I think he's slightly overvalued now. And I think Tank Dell by the end of season will be more valuable than Nico Collins. So from that perspective, I'm going to sell him. And as far as a buy goes, I like Rashee Rice because I feel like he's being valued as less than Nico Collins, despite being in a, you know, with a better quarterback, being young, coming on late, staying great, playing well through the playoffs. I really like Rashee Rice. I like them coming out. He hasn't shown me anything to move off of that. Kelsey's only getting older. We still don't have a real extra receiver coming in for the Chiefs yet, and certainly there's still options out there, but the number's only going to dwindle by the day. And this is a great receiver class, but I feel like most of the receivers, there are certainly some, but most of the receivers are more receivers who would be complementary to Rashee Rice than redundancies. At least the strengths of this class are certainly against some guys, but I don't know. I don't see much harm coming his way, and he's paired with Patrick Mahomes. What else can you really?
I like both of those. How about Jim? How about you answer this question for the buy low? This will be your buy low one. John McClendon asked, do you buy low on Treylon Burks, or are you just going to avoid him?
Well, I think you have to avoid him at this point. You just locked up a 29-year-old Ridley who'll be 30 this year for 4 years. DeAndre Hopkins, he still showed like he could play last year. He might age gracefully. So, and right now, what we saw from Burks last year, I just don't think you can really look that way. My buy low was actually Jahan Dotson, because I looked at his opportunity last year. Look, Eric Bieniemy just didn't figure things out, and they had Sam Howell, and then they had to get the ball out so darn quickly. It just never was working. But Jahan Dotson is a supremely talented player who definitely showed in his first year, and I'm not sure what the quarterback situation will be. They'll certainly draft one, and I do think, though, any upgrade and any improvement in the offense, Jahan Dotson, in my mind, is an actual star.
There we go. So I like that, too. Chase, what do you got?
My buy low candidate, I don't know if he's necessarily low enough. I don't know if you'll be able to buy him real low, but my buy candidate right now is Michael Pittman. I want Michael Pittman right now moving forward. Listen, he was 10th in the league in target share last season among wide receivers. He's got a career catch rate of around 70%, even though he's never had a quarterback who averaged 70% completion for the season. He catches whatever is thrown in his general direction. You know, his numbers aren't touchdown dependent either. You know, he's never been a giant touchdown scorer, but All that being said, the man is still 6'4". You can't coach 6'4". He's a playmaker. I really like what Michael Pittman has to offer here. We know he's sticking around. They want, you know, they've got Richardson, who hopefully will come back and be able to be healthy next season and make some plays. But we didn't really get to see those two together last season. But who else are they going to throw to on that team right now either? You know, I don't mind Josh Downs underneath. I don't mind Alec Pierce. I don't mind their 876 different tight ends who are all 6'7", outside of Kylan Granson, who just runs all over the place. But you know, I still think Michael Pittman is by far the number one option in that pass game. It doesn't matter if Anthony Richardson can throw the ball at a 65% clip or a 59% clip, because like I just said, Pittman catches everything. My sell high candidate is going to be Tyreek Hill. I think right now in Dynasty, if you can get rid of Tyreek Hill and get commensurate value back for him, go for it. Now, if you're a contender, if you think you got a shot at winning it this season, you want to hang on to him because you really want that big gun. He's still capable of being a big gun. He's coming off a historic season for at the wide receiver position here. But with Tyreek Hill, first off, he just turned 30 about a week and a half ago. He's always got off-field issues. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with him off the field in any given week. Any day you could hear something about Tyreek Hill and it wouldn't shock you how weird it was. And he has already come out and said, now how much credence do we throw into this? But he's already come out and said, oh, I'm going to finish out this contract. I'll be done after 2025. He's got other things he claims he wants to do with his life. I don't know if that involves 36 different baby mamas and houses burning down or whatever else, but he's already said that he might be, we don't know how much longer we're going to have him. He's a speed receiver. We know that he, like I said, he just turned 30. And as you brought up earlier, Dan, this is a great rookie draft for wide receivers. If you can get somebody to throw you a first and some change on top of that, and maybe another useful player, if you can get a haul for him right now, you can replace him in your lineup with one of these rookie wide receivers, have that dude for the next eight years, and not have to worry about, you know, the decline of Tyreek Hill. You can get out from underneath him while getting still good.
All right. And just the big headlines that are coming out of Chase. Chris, what do you got, man?
Well, first I was going to kind of capitalize on what Chase was talking about because it kind of goes together. One of the things going for Michael Pittman also is got Joe Flacco as a backup. So we know if he gets a chance to start, boom, Michael Pittman's going to have some legendary numbers. But what we won't be seeing Joe Flacco throw the ball to is David Njoku. And that's my sell high candidate. David Njoku had one of the resurgent years, was actually consistent for a good period of time last year, which is never goes together in the same sentence. David Njoku is consistent. We've always been kind of tantalized by his talent. We've always been tantalized by his usage. But what we saw last year was Joe Flacco kind of unleashed him. But now with the addition of weapons, Elijah Moore and more three receiver sets is a possibility. And Deshaun Watson returning as a quarterback above all, who has not necessarily featured in the tight end and doesn't usually use him except for in the red zone. I think David Njoku is a guy, if I think you're not going to get the better year than you had last year, I'm selling high on David Njoku. And then buying low, and we kind of kicked off the show with the Kirk Cousins thing. Drake London to me is my buy low. You're not going to find a better guy to get your hands on. His value.
Can you
is never
buy him low right now, though, with all the hype around?
I don't know if you can, but I don't think it's. I think the end that we're going to get to Justin Jefferson. I mean, look what Nacua did in this offense. Look at Cooper Kupp. Look at Justin Jefferson. Look at the guys who get featured as receivers in this offense and what happens to their numbers. So for me, Drake London is a guy who's been, you know, hasn't necessarily lit it up. You talked about, you know, number of receiver with 37, I think you said it was. Kyle Pitts with 57. Both guys I'd buy high on, buy low on. But I don't think you're going to be able to get these guys any lower than they will be right now.
No, that's all fair. John McGlynn coming back in with a question. I'm actually going to take this one. Jalen Hurts, is he a sell high? Yeah, John, he absolutely is. I had this stat the other day where if Jalen Hurts throws less than 31 pass attempts, he has like a 95 quarterback rating. If he throws more than that, he's got an 81.1 quarterback rating. Kellen Moore coming in. Here's my thing about the whole Eagles of it all. I don't know if Kellen Moore is really a good fit for Jalen Hurts. This is a pass-happy guy, and Hurts has always been at his best when they are more balanced, or maybe should I say even more run-balanced. That's when he puts up his most efficient numbers, not when he's back in shotgun throwing the ball 35-plus times a game. So I do have some considerations about that. If things don't go well for the Eagles this year, I think they'll be looking at another regime change. I do actually lean towards the idea that Jalen Hurts might be a sell high as of this moment, but that's just me. My actual sell high is Brandon Ayuk. That's the guy I want to sell high. Because look, when you sell a player high, you want to sell high when he's on an upswing and when he has an argument to be made that he still has more potential, even though you see some reduction in his future. That's Brandon Ayuk to me. Now, you can make the argument that next year, Debo Samuel, George Kittle could both be cap casualties. That is quite possible. But I would also argue to you that Brandon Ayuk was only able, and I do say only able, to become the wide receiver 14 this past year. And you say, well, why is that only? Well, because of the fact that you still have to deal with Debo Samuel. Because of the fact that you had 105 targets this year, he had to do it on crazy, crazy efficiency. Sixth in the NFL in receiving yards, first in yards per reception, first in yards per target, 125.7 QBR when targeted, second in yards per route run amongst all receivers that had 100 routes run last year. The idea is that if he can't be that efficient again, okay, there's going to have to be some regression heading into next season. It's still a good offense. He's still a fantastic wide receiver. Don't take any of that away from him. But the lack of volume, Debo was still the better fantasy player. Debo still had more targets per game. Brandon Ayuk only had 6.5 targets per game. That's typically at best a wide receiver two, a low end one at that. So if he regresses to the mean at all, we're going to see a downtick, and we don't know exactly what the future is going to be for the San Francisco team. So I'm actually going to sell high. The other reason I'm going to sell high, these are trades being made right now. Two first rounds plus a third, a big time wide receiver, T. Higgins, who's actually my buy low. We'll talk about him in a second, plus a first rounder. Those are deals I'm going to take for Brandon Ayuk that are being made right now. I mentioned T. Higgins being my buy low. This is just the flip side, right? He's coming off a year where he missed five games. He hasn't played a full season since 2020. So he has that going against him. People who have T. Higgins right now are looking at him like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get the wide receiver one I was hoping he was going to be. And they might just want to kind of move on from him. And to kind of put this out there right now, because we've been talking about this guy all night, you could trade Bryce Young for T. Higgins. This happened in a Superflex FFPC Dynasty League. You could actually trade Bryce Young straight up for T. Higgins right now. That's the type of deal that's being made. Give me that all day, every day. T. Higgins might move on after this year. And if he does, he could wind up being a wide receiver one for a team if he does get traded. Worst case scenario, he's still on the Cincinnati Bengals with Joe Burrow for another season with a rushing game that's going to be non-existent, as we just talked about. So it's going to be all passing all the time. So I love, 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 love T. Higgins as a buy low right now, especially when I'm seeing that kind of value. That's going to do it for our show today, though. We'll get to our free agent winners and losers next week, a bizarre story time for you guys next week. Jim, I want to thank you so much for coming on our debut with Operation Domination. What do you got coming up, man, and where should we all follow you? Not that we're not already.
Always keeping busy. The X is the best place to find me, at Jim Coventry NFL. The hub to all the work. The videos are there. Anytime I do an article for RotoWire, it's there. I won't be regularly on SiriusXM until July when we go into regular season mode, although I'm a little rumor is that on one Wednesday night a month, I'm going to be on the High Stakes Fantasy Show. So again, you'll find that out on my Twitter, again, at Jim Coventry NFL. And thanks for having me. You guys do a dynamic job with your show.
No, oh, thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate it. Adam Chase, where we can follow you guys at? Come on.
Find me on X, same way, at STT Chase FFB. Find me there. You know, I'm on the Twitter machine all the time. I'll be following all the continued signings and trades and cuts that are happening here coming up. And as we head into the draft, I'll have some thoughts there too about you know, where I'd like to see guys go. So yeah, find me on X. It's the easiest place to go.
Yep. Also X, @'s in the name on screen if you are watching, whether live or recorded. So go check that out.
Speaking of that, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at OP Domination. That's for everything for our social media feeds, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, everything. Also, now that this episode is finally done, once I get this published, we will be available on every single one of your podcast platforms. We're not yet. We will be as soon as this episode is up and running, guys. Chris, you can always catch him at OP Domination on social media too. Guys, take care. We'll see you next week, 9:30, back here live. Subscribe. We'll see you soon.